Good evening, folks, and welcome back on this Saturday, the 26th day of March, 2022. I'm your host, Mark Call. And when it comes to wrapping up the really important events of a week like this one, no doubt about it, we just plain have to follow the money. Or, better put, the fiat nowadays. And equally apropos is this famous quote from Baron Mayor Amschel Rothschild. Give me control of a nation's money, and I care not who makes its laws. We've heard them before, that and no doubt others too, but I can't help but point out the reason is because they're so very, very true. And we're seeing them all over again. I want to start out today with a historic reminder about the fact that in so many times throughout history, we have seen societies literally implode after they get into hyperinflation. We saw it in Weimar Germany. The incredible hyperinflation of the 1920s brought a fellow named Adolf Hitler to power. We've seen it any number of times in other places around the world since then. Argentina, and of course, most recently, fairly famously, in Zimbabwe, and arguably, real soon now, whether we see it quite as bad remains to be seen or not, but we're certainly on track for it, in America, with a K. But the real key is, and history certainly bears this out, it is corrosive in the extreme to the moral fabric of a country. If people can't count on their money being worth anything, and basically it's the unit of exchange, it's what they have to use in order to buy food, who literally prepare for the next day, well, then what good is law? Why pay any attention to it? And therein lies the rub. What I want to do today is to talk about a couple of aspects of that and what it means and what we need to be thinking about right now because, again, we're on that road. And as I often like to do, I'm going to start by laying out a few dots. And we'll connect most of them in the second segment today. First, let's start with something that has intentionally, I think, been dropped off the radar. The COVID-19 pandemic and all of the economic destruction that came directly from Fauci and his deep state's two-part bioweapon. This piece comes from Alex Berenson. It touches on a point maybe you've already noticed. Vaccine passports, he begins, are dead. Vaccine mandates are even deader. And actual vaccinations are the deadest of all. The COVID vaccine era, he suggests, as a result of all this, is ending already. All over Europe, countries are dropping COVID vaccination passports only months after introducing them. Since Friday, Italy and Greece have become the latest nations to say they'll dump the passport requirements as of May 1st. Both countries have made usual noises about not needing the rules because COVID is, oh yeah, sure, so under control. We are, of course, they say, keeping a very close watch on the epidemic curve, said Italy's prime minister. Yeah, watching the number of new infections almost double in the last 2 weeks. So viewed over the long term, the picture is even worse. When Italy introduced its vaccine passport last September, it had roughly 4,000 infections a day. When it tightened those restrictions in December, it had under 15,000. Now it's up to 70,000 a day. So he suggests the implication here is obvious. COVID vaccination restrictions are ending, not because the mRNA not vaccines have succeeded, but because they have failed, and failed so miserably. What's more, the depth of that failure is so complete that it sounds almost conspiratorial even to talk about. The mRNA not vaccines don't work, not just only against Omicron, they have negative efficacy. Which means, yeah, if you're stupid enough to take it, you're more likely to get infected, not less, and maybe that's what happens when you destroy the immune system. Which is why, he says, the most highly vaccinated countries in the world now have levels of infection far higher than they had last year or even in 2020, and far higher than countries that didn't get duped into using the mRNA not vaccines. Here in Austria, says the author writing about his home, in January, we became the first country in Europe to announce not just a vaccine passport, but a COVID vaccine mandate. Well, Austria now has more coronavirus infections than the entire United States, even though its population is just 1/35th as large. No wonder they dumped the mandate 2 weeks ago before it ever really took effect. And no wonder the German parliament walked away last week from plans to pass their own mandate. As a result, Omicron is rocketing around Europe and parts of East Asia at levels that were previously unthinkable. Meanwhile, countries that didn't use the mRNA poison poke, or to a lesser extent, the DNA shot from AstraZeneca, have far, far smaller caseloads. And even if in the very short run a second booster shot may reduce infections marginally, even the most committed vaccine fanatics are pressing for a fourth shot only half-heartedly now, since clinical trial data supporting its use basically doesn't exist, and the pattern's clear. Once the supranational antibodies wane, any so-called protection does, too. But your host can't help but point out, once the immune system is destroyed, it basically not only stays dead, but cancers that may have been thought to be dead roar back with a vengeance, and we're seeing that all over the place. Which brings us to the bottom line here. While governments never ever want to admit that they were wrong, or deadly wrong even, in other words, the COVID jabs have failed, the citizenry is beginning to understand reality. Fewer than 80,000 Americans a day, he says, are now getting their dreaded boosters out of more than 100 million people who are eligible. And by definition, the booster audience shouldn't be vaccine hesitant because they've already shown they were willing to take the first couple of pokes. Did they finally start to take the red pill too? So the only question left is what happens next? Whether countries who have been trying to kill their citizenry outright will be able to continue to talk or coerce them into taking more of the poison pokes. Oh yeah, and what happens to the people who've already taken several? Did they die? How do they die? Are their deaths reported as being related to the COVID Zyklon B injections, or can they cover it up? Oh, I know. How about a nuclear war, or at least nuclear fallout, maybe from a dirty bomb? Whether it's a real terrorist and they're letting them in by the thousands across the southern border, or just a false flag. They can blame that on the fallout, and of course Putin, too. Given where we are, folks, on the scale of worldwide financial collapse, I think it's important again today to talk about several aspects of that. I've got two pieces sitting here in front of me that really do a nice job of summarizing, well, some overlap, but a lot of different pieces of what's going on. The first one's from Egon von Greyerz, the founder of Matterhorn Asset Management and Gold Switzerland, who again reminds us that all hell is currently in the process of breaking loose for all humanity. We're not at the end of an era, he says, of economic and moral decadence in a debt-infested world built on false values, fake money, and abysmal leadership. And all hell's going to break loose. The consequences will, he said, be fatal for the world. And as most people do when they try to point out just exactly where we are and how bad things have gotten and how we got here, he begins with a look at history, saying it's the buildup of a massive mountain of debt which has given the world a false sense of comfort based on false values. And he noted, as he has many times, that the U.S. has increased its debt every year since 1930, the last Great Depression, with a couple of minor exceptions in the 50s and 60s, and of course the alleged Clinton balance budget during the 1990s, was an accounting fraud that didn't even fool the leftists. But in history, he notes, when there's undue economic pressure, starting wars becomes really popular, and it's generally thought to be necessary, and it's certainly convenient, and we're seeing that today writ large, to blame the war for increasing debts and, of course, yes, inflation and all kinds of other nasty shortages that were going to happen anyway, but now we have a scapegoat. And here he points to the fact that the gold standard, back when we actually had a constitution, was an excellent method for preventing governments from spending money they didn't have and then printing it out of nothing, followed by an interesting observation that when Nixon in the late 1960s had to meet U.S. debts to France by paying them in gold, he, in August of 1971, decided to close the gold window temporarily. And here we are, over half a century later, and the gold window is still temporarily closed. And if you look at a chart of the unbelievable growth in U.S. debt since 1971, it's been exponential ever since, but now that we're in the final stages, the debt curve has been explosive in addition to exponential since 2019. But still, he says, bad as it is, the fat lady hadn't sung yet. The debt explosion isn't finished, and a lot's going to happen before the fat lady does sing, because like most economic eras, this one will finish with a number of spectacular events, many of which will take place concurrently. For example, only a few months back, Powell and Lagarde were singing from the same hymn sheet about transitory inflation. Remember that? Well, now, as these central banksters have proven consistently, they're always wrong. They were trying to get inflation to 2% or so they said, and all of a sudden, it's approaching 10%. That's official numbers. Really, it's a lot higher than that. And they still don't know what hit them. They haven't understood even that Keynesianism was dead before it started. Because even a monkey can understand that if you print tens of trillions of dollars and keep interest rates at zero or even negative for years, the end result will inevitably be spectacular inflation. Initially, he says, we saw unprecedented asset inflation in bonds, stock, and property, but it was always clear that the exponential increase in the money supply would eventually reach consumer prices. So what's coming next is the inevitable perfect storm, meaning that everything that can go wrong will, and it's not just the obvious failures in so many parts of society, but also totally unforeseen consequences, at least unforeseen by those who don't understand actual economics. Here we go, he says. Let's take a look at some of them. Stocks have topped worldwide. The correction currently taking place is likely to end very soon in a devastating decline, and everybody's going to get slaughtered when all hell breaks loose. Whether investors buy the dip or just hold on to their stocks, they won't understand what hit them. Then he shows some charts from other similar events, 1973, 87, 1999, 2007, and 2020, which were all nail-biters at the time. But today, you can hardly discern many of them on the chart, because the charts are mostly printed in fiat terms. And this time, the explosion will really make things different. Stocks, he writes, are likely to decline by 75 to 95% in real terms and not recover for years or maybe decades. He recalls that back in 1929, the earlier Great Depression, the Dow declined by 90%, and it took a quarter century before it even recovered in nominal terms. And this time, things are exponentially worse. Bonds, too, have gone up for over 40 years, and they have now reached zero or negative rates, which have now turned up, however. And we're probably going to see interest rates reach at least the 1980 levels of 15 to 20%, and probably higher in the hyperinflationary debt collapse on the horizon. Many bonds will become worthless and more suitable for framing and hanging on a toilet wall as a reminder for future generations. And by the way, folks, those reminders were there in history. And as your host has said for many years now, the real key to having another Great Depression is that everybody with the good sense to recognize or learn the lessons of what went wrong the last time has to die. That's why it's been about 90 years this time. Credit markets will come under the same pressure as bond markets with defaults. Given that people won't even be in a position to service the debt, much less repay it, property markets have also reached extremes, fueled by cheap or even free money and unlimited credit at very high leverage. Today, worldwide, most mortgage borrowers could barely afford an increase of 3%, never mind 10 or 20% like in the 1970s. So as rates rise, expect to see the bubbles in the residential and commercial property markets implode, leading to major defaults, very high vacancy rates, and homelessness. Governments will initially subsidize those markets, and you can look at the examples already, by endless money printing, but in the end, that too will fail as the money simply dies. And then he says, let's not forget derivatives, which are a major financial nuclear bomb, likely to be a death knell for all of the markets. As I wrote in a recent article, he said, entitled Chaos and the Triumph of Survival, global derivatives, primarily over-the-counter, are most likely in the two-plus quadrillion dollar range. And every single financial instrument contains a derivative element with massive leverage. So due to the current volatility in commodities markets, most large commodity trading firms, as well as most hedge funds, are now exposed to margin calls. He gives some examples, but says, remember, all of these things are just the beginning of the crisis, with more bad news unraveling on a daily basis. So as the derivative market blows up with counterparties failing, central banksters will have to try to print quadrillions of more worthless dollars, paving the way for what else? The way things usually end on a system like this, massive hyperinflation. Banks and financial systems will clearly be under tremendous pressure initially, and eventually they'll totally or partly fail as the above problems unravel. And governments and central banksters will end up being, obviously, powerless in this scenario. The rescue of the system in 2008 was just a temporary stay of execution. Global debt has now trebled since this early century failure, from $100 trillion to over $300 trillion. But remember, that's mostly fake money, which has created false asset values that are themselves standing on a foundation of quicksand. And now, writes Egon von Graertz, all of this is about to collapse. And furthermore, it's not just an economic and a financial storm, but also human hell, because the financial crisis will have ripple effects, trickle down, yeah, devastating effects all around the world. Here are a few affected areas, he writes. Commodity inflation, guaranteed. You're already seeing gasoline prices. Before that, construction materials, raw materials, minerals, and so on. For years, it's been clear that the long-term commodity cycle was bottoming and a massive surge in commodity prices was fixing to start. Well, but hey, that's why they needed Vladimir Putin, so they'd have somebody to blame it on. The cycle had already started to go up, he writes, well before the Ukraine crisis, but it's fascinating how events fall into place in order to create that perfect storm. Dollar collapse, together with most other currencies, is guaranteed. As money printing and inflation rises in an uncontrolled fashion, the dollar will quickly reach its intrinsic value, which any student of history or the Bible knows is zero. And most currencies will follow, but they will take turns. Digital money is likely to be launched in coming years, but, says von Graerts, I don't think that cryptocurrencies will play a major role except as a very speculative investment. But by the way, folks, those of us that understand the mark of the beast in Revelation recognize, yeah, there will be a mandate associated with it in order to get the rest of this to play out. But more importantly, back to von Graerts, the CBDC, or central bank digital currencies, which will be another form of fiat money, will simply go digital. But as with all fiat money, CBDCs will quickly be debased by endless electronic printing. Oh yeah, he too talks about the World Economic Forum and Klaus Schwab, which have now achieved more prominence than they deserve. In my view, he says, they'll lose whatever power they now have as financial asset values and their wealth implode. Thus, he says, I don't believe that their reset will happen or succeed. Governments may try resets, but that too will fail. The only reset will be disorderly, and as outlined above. In other words, folks, he's predicting that instead of the mark of the beast and a system that rises out of the ashes, there'll be just general chaos, turbulence, and complete worldwide destruction. Again, he calls it human hell. Unemployment will increase dramatically as world trade declines and the financial system comes under pressure. A whole lot of companies are going to perish. Pension systems will fail as the value of pension funds collapses. Social security systems won't function since governments will run out of anything approaching money. And human hell breaking loose will sadly be felt by most people on planet Earth as a consequence of all the problems outlined above. And that, he says, is without a bigger trigger like a nuclear war, which would obviously be, if you can imagine it, even worse. Massive price increases, especially in food and energy, combined with shortages, will hit everyone, both developing nations and the industrialized world. And the consequences of food shortages and economic misery, combined with governments failing to function properly, will lead to societal unrest in many places, and yeah, probably civil war as well. With that as a foundation, folks, I want to add some observations by Mike Adam and his Situation Report update. This piece is entitled System Failure. Commodities markets, banks, currencies, and contracts have begun to break down, and the consequences, and he agrees with all of us on this score, will be catastrophic. When nickel prices, he began, recently spiked to $100,000 a ton, the LME, or London Metal Exchange, decided to halt all trading and reverse over 4,000 trades in order to protect the profits of a China-based mega player who'd been exposed to over $5 billion in margin calls. Now, I've talked about this one before, and I completely concur. In effect, writes Adams, the LME declared that they will now pick the winners and the losers arbitrarily. Markets be damned. And, of course, they've been rigging the markets for a long time anyway. In doing that, he writes, and again, I agree completely, the LME has committed financial and credibility suicide. There's now no rational reason for any investor or trader to trust any transaction at the LME, or for that matter, folks, likewise, the COMEX, whether it's in copper, aluminum, zinc, nickel, or other metals, especially the paper kind like gold and silver, well, you already knew they never intended to deliver anyway. Markets no longer work at LME, and you're only allowed to win a trade if the LME gives you, and if you're politically correct enough, the nod. And wins can even be retroactively stolen from you by the exchange simply reversing trades. They'll actually go back in time and screw you over for past winnings. Oh yeah, but it goes further. In Canada recently, the tyrannical Justin Castro Trudeau regime ordered banks to seize private account holdings of citizens who dared to donate to the Freedom Trucker Convoy. Overnight, the contract of banking was ripped to shreds. Banks can no longer be trusted to protect assets you've deposited with them. And by the way, folks, this isn't new either. If you recognize that it's only fiat anyway, and furthermore, you're just an unsecured creditor, well, that truly is nothing new. It's just that they've taken the gloves off there as well. Instead, says Adams, now they can steal your money anytime Big Brother orders them to do so, utterly without even a semblance of due process or rule of law, and that's even if you have broken no actual laws whatsoever. On a larger scale, the central banks of the world just stole $300 billion in central bank reserves, and he correctly puts it in quotes here, owned by Russia, Russia, Russia. After their invasion of Ukraine, Western banks decided to give them permission to steal that $300 billion in Russian assets, thereby destroying the entire concept of what were laughably called reserves in one fell swoop. So now, no rational nation in the world will trust Western central banks to hold their reserves, sick, in any safe manner. Central banks, in other words, are now train robbers, and they can loot whatever accounts are held by foreign nations, too, not just their people that they no longer like. And a quick aside here, folks. Can you see what that is already doing to international trade? Why would anybody trust any of these clearinghouses, especially people like SWIFT, given what's going on? And you can see where that leads. And in courtrooms across America and Western nations, continues Mike Adams, facts, reason, and law are increasingly becoming irrelevant. Take, for example, the latest excuse for a Supreme Court justice, who has only two qualifications, other than being so far left of center she doesn't even know what communist means, and that's her color and her presumed gender. Although, admittedly, she doesn't even know what the word woman means either. Prosecutorial decisions, writes Adams, are now being made entirely based on virtue signaling. If a leftist, for example, murders a Trump supporter in broad daylight, the charges will be dropped against him. That's exactly what happened recently in Colorado. But if a conservative does nothing more than peacefully protest at, say, the nation's Capitol building, once an activity protected by that First Amendment thingy, they'll be thrown into prison for years, don't need a stinking trial, even if they violated no laws and, as it turns out, did nothing wrong, and even while leftists are getting away literally with arson and murder elsewhere. If you own a home in America, says Adams, and you rent it out to someone, you think you have a rent contract with that renter. But when the COVID pandemic got underway, the Central Death Command suddenly declared they were the controlling legal authority over rent contracts, and they declared that no renters could be evicted even if they refused to honor the contract and pay rent. Overnight, the CDC, too, essentially condemned real estate owners to bankruptcy while handing out free housing to renters who quickly became squatters, which is the equivalent of the CDC ordering pizza shops to hand out free pizza to everyone until they go bankrupt, or ordering gas stations to give out free gas. And don't think, folks, that they're not thinking about that in California. The economic implications of this decision, says Adams, are truly catastrophic and far-reaching. For example, what investor would ever want to invest in providing housing from here on out? And what he's really describing here is a time and a place where literally contracts aren't worth the paper they're printed on. We've seen that for a long time with the contract that was once called the Constitution, especially the Bill of Rights. Now it's to the point where literally you can have a contract and Big Brother says, we could care less about that. I'm changing the deal.
I am altering the deal. Pray I don't alter it any further.
And he's right, and this is the central point in all of these stories, folks. I've literally been talking about it as long as I've been doing radio. But as Adams puts it, the pillars of Western civilization are breaking down now right in front of our eyes. If reserves doesn't really mean reserves, if money doesn't mean money, and it's merely currency as we've known for a long time, if home ownership doesn't mean ownership, that's been true for a long time too. Hey, remember who you're paying rent to, and if you don't, Big Brother at the county level will come and take your house or what you thought was your house away. Well, all of these point in the same direction. The rule of law doesn't mean law. And the very foundation of Western civilization isn't there at all. That's been increasingly true of free markets. We haven't had them ever since we've had fiat money, and certainly it applies to the allocation of capital. And that, folks, is a big part of the reason why hyperinflation has always been so corrosive to entire societies. When an honest citizen can't trust the courts to apply the law, when there is no such thing as honest money, honest weights and measures, and what you have today, you might not have tomorrow, well then, what point is there in any kind of law? After all, it's not worth the paper it's printed on. Even what George Bush called it, a GD piece of paper. And I'll summarize it this way, because you're seeing it now, folks. Lawlessness abounds, and yeah, the love of many is growing cold. And as bad as things already are, that process, too, is really just getting started. And that understanding is vital. Which takes us now to the bottom of the hour break, so we'll pick it up there when we get back, connect some dots, and draw the conclusion.
You can bury your dead, but don't leave a trace. Hate your next door neighbor, but don't forget to say grace.
Welcome back now, folks, to the second segment of the show for this evening. I am your host, Mark Hall, and we're talking about big lies revealed and other elements involved in a breakdown of trust in a financial system that really never deserved it to begin with. And some aspects of that follow the money, a number of things that admittedly have been themes on this show before, but I think the difference this week is even if people would say, oh, I don't want to believe it, I choose to ignore it, we're at the point where, well, that choice is going to be one of those life and death decisions that can't be put off too much longer. What I want to do as we start this segment is to kind of pick up where we left off with the follow the money idea and the fact that the Great Reset, as Klaus Schwab and the evil banksters at the World Economic Foundation have been trying to prep and get people ready for. By the way, if you see where all of that leads, it's pretty obvious that Scripture had it right long before even they figured it out. It was called the Mark of the Beast in Revelation. And we can see how all the parameters of that are not only already in place, but literally being knit together as we speak. Anyway, this is a piece from Dr. Joseph Mercola called Phase 2 of that Great Reset, and it's war. He notes that what we're seeing looks like an existential battle between good and evil. And that, if anything, is one of the themes of this show. Maybe you feel like this creeping malevolence is hard to ignore. But we're being hit with one crisis after another, and certainly there's nothing organic or even natural about any of them, because they seem manufactured and intentional. So the question on everyone's mind, he says, is why? Now, of course, we've been talking about the why as long as I've been doing this show, but it's a question worth asking. Why would anyone intentionally create fear, destruction, hatred, misery, and grief? To most people, such evil is unimaginable. And that, by the way, is why they can get away with it, folks. But the adversary does come but to kill and destroy. Anyway, that's the reason they don't want to believe it's being done. Yet here we are, not only on the brink of economic meltdown, unparalleled in history, but World War II. And the seeds of hatred, says Dr. Mercola, are being purposefully sown. While the days of peace on earth have been few in the history of mankind, we're now seeing an escalation in hatred and calls for violence and outright murder actively encouraged. And this is something that, admittedly, it bugs me. Meta, a.k.a. Two-Facebook, that's the new name of that evil Cerberus of a corporation. The parent company of Two Facebook and Instagram, they have relaxed their hate speech policies in certain countries, and against certain undesirable people, as long as the hatred is directed, well, now against Russians. But remember, wasn't long ago, and it's still okay, that you could hate all white people. They've already done that. You could certainly hate all unvaccinated people. They did that too. And hey, how much longer till they decide it's okay to hate all Christians or Jews and call for their deaths? Have we ever seen anything like that before? Oh, yeah. The Scripture tell us we're going to see it again? You betcha. So while attacker hatred is normal, one day the designated target for justifiable hatred just may be you, especially if you believe and serve another master than the prince of this world. One day, Meta will decide it's okay to call for the death of all Christians and so forth. Well, the justifiable hatred idea, where the hell, I'll say it, did that come from? it's okay to hate and call for violence against certain groups. And guess who gets to decide which groups are deserving of hatred? Yeah, the same people that are destroying the world, printing the fake money, and getting the slaves to march in lockstep like lemmings over the cliff. Right now, media and government and business leaders are fomenting hatred against Russia, 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 even with people with Russian-sounding names that have nothing to do with Putin or the decision to go into Ukraine. Why? Because, well, if we still had a national government and China was putting missiles in Mexico, not the new guy, remind, the guy who took over by hook or by crook, he's fomenting that. He wouldn't have a problem with it any more than they have a problem with an invasion. But once upon a time, at least in theory, Americans might have had a problem. We did have a problem, come to think of it, with Khrushchev putting missiles in Cuba. And that seems clear to me, says Mercola, the war drums are part and parcel of the Great Reset Plan. The devastating impact of the plandemic was always part one. War is part two. And he describes some stuff that he's seen on an organization called Winter Oak, that writes, welcome to phase two of the Great Reset War. While the pandemic acclimatized the world to lockdowns, normalized the acceptance of experimental poisons, medications they called them, precipitated the greatest transfer of wealth to corporations in history by decimating SMEs, small and medium-sized enterprises, and adjusted the muscle memory of workforce operations in preparation for a cybernetic failure. By the way, that's on the horizon, too. The Biden Fuhrer is even saying, expect a cyber attack, and if Russia won't do it, I'll have to, it seems. Anyway, an additional vector was required to accelerate the economic collapse before nations could build back better or build back at all. So there are a number of ways in which the current conflict between Russia and Ukraine is clearly the next catalyst for the WEF Great Reset agenda. All right. He goes through several of them. I'll abbreviate a lot of this just to make the point, because I think you see where we're headed. Changes to supply chain, changes to the global workforce. Oh, yeah, we need a new recession. We're going to get it. We have the fourth industrial revolution that the globalists and technocrats have been talking about for a long time. This one I wasn't going to spend a lot of time on, but it is worth mentioning because it, too, comes right out of the book of Revelation, the merger of man and machine. Technologies and scientific innovations will become extensions of our own bodies and minds. Well, isn't that the point of meta, the metaverse, and a place that's better than reality? And by the way, you won't be able to exist in reality. You'll starve there. So, hey, you know, go into the cocoon of your machine. Maybe you can transfer your soul into the machine. Or if you can't, hey, how are you ever going to know? Anyway, those spearheading the Great Research, says the Great Reset, says the article here, seek to manage geopolitical risks by creating new markets which revolve around digital innovations, e-strategies, telepresence for labor, artificial intelligence, robotics, nanotech, the Internet of Things, and the Internet of Bodies. The breakneck speed at which all these AI technologies are being deployed suggests that their optimization will initially bear on traditional industries and professions, which offer a safety net for the millions, the hundreds of millions of workers in farming, retail, catering, manufacturing, and the courier industries. Basically, there are all these jobs that are going to be replaced, and they're going to be done away with anyway as the economy collapses. Isn't that a clever thing? See, they'll simply say, oh, well, this was the inevitable outgrowth of technology, when in fact, it was the inevitable outgrowth of what they've been working so hard to foment for so long. He goes on to note that back in 2011, the Huffington Post, there's a leftist rag for you, actually published an article debating whether or not nuclear war might be helpful for reversing global warming. It's not enough that we can, you know, geoengineer the planet and put all this crap in the atmosphere and reflect sunlight. We want to pretend that it's not global cooling that's happening. It's global warming. And we're going to make it that much worse. The world's resources are already owned by the richest of the rich, while the rest of the population can be controlled by the allocation of things that, you know, they're useless eaters and not deserving to have anyway. Food shortages are a boon to the synthetic food industry. And, of course, you've seen Gates and company pushing that. You'll eat bugs. You'll like it. Sanctions against Russia may speed up the control grid. Russia has been excluded from SWIFT, which is for international telecommunications. That foreshadows the Great Reset, which will generate precisely the blowback necessary for corralling huge swaths of the global population into their control grid. And we're seeing all of these things. Fear is a tool of tyrants, the rise of global technocracy, and so forth. The Great Reset basically has a number of elements to it, but it's called a PSYOP, as you might suspect, beginning with demoralization and then crisis. Remember the Hegelian dialectic, crisis, and then the reaction to the crisis. Oh, what comes out of it? Yeah, more control for the people who are running things anyway. Finally, the new normal. And yeah, controlling a smaller number of people, but more completely. And so if we can kill off a few hundred millions or billions with the poison poke, maybe a nuclear war, and by the way, we want to make sure that when they die, we'll be able to blame it on Putin or something equally innocuous. No, not the world reserve currency failing because of the Fed, not the vaccine. No, it's going to have to be something different, and you can already see the candidates emerging. Now, from there, I want to go to just a few comments from Dr. Paul Craig Roberts, and you'll see this one is a place where I'm going to draw a distinction and say, hey, we need to be careful. Just like we need to be careful with all of this AI stuff and say, hey, do you want to merge your mind to the machine? Are you willing to have your DNA re-engineered because God didn't get your immune system right? But Big Brother, Pfizer, he certainly will. Fauci can be trusted. I mean, good grief. If there's anybody I wouldn't want messing with my DNA, folks, it's Satan's emissary on planet Earth. And if you think I'm kidding, again, this is a guy who would have made Dr. Mengele blush. We're talking about a level of evil here, and I guess that's the quick aside. A level of evil which, honestly, most of us just plain can't wrap our heads around. Okay, so this is Paul Craig Roberts' story. The headline is, Washington is driving the world to nuclear war. And I think anybody that's paying attention can kind of see where that's going. Consistently, he says, Washington is sending a signal that, it's all about Russia, 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 and the Kremlin. Why has nobody pointed out that, in fact, they've been poking the bear for a long time? It's difficult to imagine, says Roberts, or to fathom the irresponsibility of Washington adding to the Ukraine provocation the way they did with three more simultaneously. In other words, they've been poking the bear. They decided to hit him with three more things. They basically had a color revolution, or at least attempted one, in the former Russian province of Kazakhstan. NATO military maneuvers currently underway in Georgia, a former Russian province, not a NATO member. And, of course, maneuvers on the border of Belarus in Poland. All of which are saying, hey, you know, if we didn't get you to nuclear first strike as before, take that and that and that. So what, says Paul Craig Roberts, is Russia doing in response to the declared intent of the West to destroy her? Now, this is the place where I think the plot really thickens. So we're told Putin may be evil, but he's probably brilliant. He's certainly more brilliant than a guy who can't poop his pants and know that he did it on the world stage and doesn't have the brain power to recognize that his vice president is almost as stupid or worse than he is. I mean, the level of incompetence in U.S. leadership, folks, boggles the mind. It would have been a sick joke a few years ago. Remember how they joked about Ronald Reagan being an actor? Well, Zelenko is an actor. He's not even as good of a one as Reagan is, or was. I guess Reagan's probably still a better actor than Zelenko. And here we sit with an embarrassment, literally an international embarrassment, allegedly occupying the White House. But what's Putin doing? This is the part that really ought to raise some eyebrows. What are they doing in response to the declared intent of the West to destroy her? Remember SWIFT system? They want to steal Russian gold. She is enabling, says Roberts, her own destruction. Russia contributes by distributing her foreign exchange reserves among Western banks where they can be seized. Now, that's a good question. Why do you think? Now, maybe he couldn't have gotten them out. Maybe he's been trying, and I've certainly seen stories to that effect. But there are a lot of Russian assets in various Western banks where they can be seized. She keeps the economies of her enemies alive by continuing to supply some of them, those that aren't too stupid like the United States, and say, oh, we'd rather freeze than have your gas. We'd rather destroy our people rather than have your food. And even Biden, most recently, is saying, America's going to suffer. Yeah, that's the intent. That's exactly what he was put in place to do. But Russia is suffering, too. She does moronic things. in her central bank. Russia needs a foreign exchange. Roberts asks, why, oh, why are they keeping the head of the Russian central bank in there? What's wrong with Putin? Where these things can be seized. She continues a go-slow war that gives her enemies more time to demonize Russia and create permanent hatred in the Western populations, and gives the Western idiots more time to blunder into a wider war, such as the plan to deploy NATO peacekeepers in Ukraine. In short, says Roberts, the Kremlin's response to sanctions that are already idiotic and counterproductive is mindless as well. It makes no sense. Unless, now here's where I step back and I say, okay, for those of us that don't admire Vladimir Putin, I do have to admit, okay, he's not quite as senile, for crying out loud, as anything in the deep state swamp. But still, the guy is KGB, he's NKVD, he's an assassin, a murderer. He's not what you call a moral dude. And yet, neither are anybody on the other team. So it's a case of the devil in the deep blue sea, or two satanic forces fighting it out with one another. You see what the point is here? Ultimately, I'm going to suggest the following. What does Scripture tell us? He comes but to kill and destroy. All of these people, Team Russia and Team Kremlin in America, are both serving the same master. It's kind of hard to deny when you see the moves that are being made on the one hand that look smart by militarily invading Ukraine because, oh, we got to get those missiles out of there. Maybe they did some other things like making sure that they first took control of the bioweapons labs that were run by America so that America couldn't release the bioweapons they'd been developing against Russia, or maybe the nuclear reactors that were there before so that they couldn't release radioactive waste. But still, something is horribly wrong here. Again, I think the answer is clear. It makes no sense why Russia would allow these things to happen. It's obvious that the United States is attempting self-destruction, but it looks like Russia, on the other hand, is not fighting with an intent to do the obvious. Honestly, here's the thing I almost hate to address, but it makes sense. Given that America has exposed her underbelly, why wouldn't Russia have taken the shot and simply wiped America out with a nuclear first strike? They could have done it. They've got the hypersonic missiles. They've got the Tsar Bomba. Whether Americans are too dumbed down to know it or not, they have the ability to knock tsunamis ashore on both coasts and destroy everything for 100 miles inland. And yet they haven't done it. If the intent is to do all of the things that that we think the bad guy wants to do, you have to ask, why haven't they? Well, let me throw out one more piece into the puzzle here. Russia will backstop the ruble with gold, says a piece from Quoth the Reagan, the Raven. They've come right out and said it. When it comes to selling oil or gas to unfriendly nations, they are only going to transact in rubles. And this author expects, and I've seen many that are in agreement, I tend to think that if Russia is doing what you'd expect them to, this would be a logical next move, they would fall back on gold, saying, okay, you want to conduct international trade, we'll do it in rubles, and either we'll back the ruble with gold, or same thing, basically, we will accept gold, or at least deliverable contracts, if we still trust contracts, hey, that's a question, isn't it, for gold in exchange for oil and natural gas and things that we have and you need. Says the article here, the backstopping of the ruble with gold can come in many forms. Doesn't have to be a direct peg from the ruble to gold. It can include the far more likely scenarios of accepting payments for oil or natural gas in gold. And he quotes Vladimir Putin, who said in a televised government meeting recently, I've decided to implement a series of measures to switch payments. We'll start with that, for our natural gas supplies to the so-called unfriendly countries into Russian rubles. So it makes sense that this is what's happening. And all of this basically is the biggest threat to the almighty fiat dollar in the history of the once gold and silver-backed honest money. So in the last few minutes, let's talk a little bit about what all of this means. Certainly, there are a number of pieces of this I've talked about for some time. Scripture says, come out of her, my people. Do not participate in the sins. And among the sins, by the way, not just destroying your immune system, the fearfully and wonderfully thing made thing that God gave you to protect you from disease by instead believing different gods, fake gods, Fauci gods, and saying, oh, I can re-engineer my DNA. I'll put this mRNA in there. I'll put God knows what. Well, no, Fauci knows what into the bloodstream. I don't even know if Fauci knows. I think they got so many things they're pumping into people on an experimental basis. They don't even know what all they're pumping into people, but at least we're finding out that different batches have different stuff. But the point, again, look and see all of this evil that's being done and ask yourself, why would anybody who knows what's going on participate? So, yeah, come out and come out in all kinds of ways, not merely by saying, okay, I'm going to refuse this vaccine mandate. I'm going to refuse the poison poke. Well, wait a minute. Hey, didn't we just do a story that said they're backing off on the poison poke? Oh, yeah. But here's the point. Don't kid yourself. Don't think for a second that they're done. They got exposed. People are waking up and realizing, oh, the poison poke is exactly that. I don't think I want to do it anymore to my immune system. Can I just quit while I only need glasses, right? The old joke, that kind of thing. If I stop now, do I have some immune system left? Can I maybe survive what's coming? I have suggested the possibility of false flags and warned that that will be used as an excuse for the millions upon millions of people that are already dead men walking. They just don't know it yet. The bottom line is, you look at all this stuff and you say, this is pretty nasty. This is pretty negative on almost every level. It's almost so overwhelming. And this is the thing that I really have spent the whole show kind of setting up so that we can make sure we don't fall victim to it. It's so overwhelming, people may be tempted to say, oh, well, if there's a nuclear war, I'd rather just die. Oh, well, if it's this pervasive and massive, I better just take the Zyklon B injection. I better just take the Mark of the Beast. Why fight it? I can't win. Beside which, they'll come after my children, and they'll make life miserable for me. They'll take away the things I love most. And, right, what mother wouldn't take the poison poke to prevent her children from doing it? Trouble is, folks, the mother that signs up for that deal with the devil should have known better. He's a liar. The truth is not in him. He's going to kill you first, then he'll kill the kids later. So the bottom line here is both at the same time very simple and almost but not quite overwhelming. All of these things are coming together at once. People are going to be looking at it and saying, yeah, I can't possibly fight back against it. How can I possibly deal with this? And I'm going to suggest that the answer is both painfully clear. Very simple, so simple that it's sitting here. We've talked about it. It's been right before our eyes all of this time. And yet, in the face of the overwhelming, you know, tidal wave of crap that's coming down, even people who know it can succumb to panic and fear. And that's the reason why, if it sounds like I'm talking about things that we've talked about before, well, this is the reason pilots practice emergency landings. You know, in the entire time I've been flying, I've never, ever had to make emergency landing. I've practiced it many, many times. And hopefully, prayerfully, if I ever do, it'll be old hat. Not because I've done it, but just because I've practiced it to the point where my body knows that I've done it, and I know how it works out. I can do it. And the same thing ought to be true when it comes to come out of her. When it comes to understanding, you know, I don't have to participate in a system of dishonest weights and measures. I don't have to sign up for the universal ID card. I don't have to sign up for the CCP version. And don't think for a second the Biden puppet Fuhrer isn't going to go right along with it. Of the socialist credit system. Or, you know, you useless eaters that won't be allowed to eat. Or travel or do any of the other things. Without your vaccine passport or whatever kind of passport they'll demand next. And, there'll be another one. Rest assured, it'll be coming. And what's the bottom line? There will be a mark. They may even come right out and call it that. Do you remember the military years ago developed a card for the military? They even called it the mark, the military affiliated something or other card. But they came right out and rubbed people's noses in it. I have no doubt that they'll do precisely that again. When this happens, it's going to be really obvious to the point where people will say, oh, no, they wouldn't be that obvious, will they? And the answer is, of course they will. Because the point is not, it is deception, ultimately, but it's deception via fear, via coercion, via making it a point. And it's a lie, but it's still about as close to where they're headed as you can get. They intend to convince you that you have no choice, that the only answer is to serve the prince of this world, is literally to choose death. And it's about as simple and clear of a choice as it could possibly be. As you know, I often like to quote Deuteronomy chapter 30. And this is one of those big places in Scripture that addresses so many lies. I encourage you, if you haven't read it, go read it. Only Jesus can keep the law. That's debunked right off the top. No, it's not here. It's not there. It's not across the sea. You don't have to ask who'll go get it for us. Nope, it's easy. You can do it. It's in your mouth. It's in your heart. And then what does he say? I've laid before you this day life and blessing, death and cursing. It's an open book test. It's real simple. All you have to do is choose life. And it really is that simple. I have seen people, we've probably at least read stories about this, who face with a life or death decision, literally give up and choose death. In so many situations, and I've talked about this a lot of late, whether it's scuba diving or flying or any number of other things where people can panic, and to panic is to die. Panic is a choice of death. So I encourage you, I urge you, pray, think about it now, in advance, so that you can choose life and come out of her and not fall victim to panic or fear, because that's precisely what the enemy has planned and has been working so hard toward, and now we're there. Forewarned is forearmed, but time draws short.